Welcome to the Food Weekly, where we take a fresh look at New Zealand's most important food stories. Proudly brought to you by AUT Plant and Food and Beef and Lamb New Zealand. Don't forget to join us at thefeed.co.nz. And now for a bite.
Rex Pickett is the enigmatic, charming, and often slightly offhand writer of astonishing film Sideways that took wine lovers and wine appreciation to a whole new public sphere. It was hard not to fall in love with the semi-autobiographical characters. Rex is now in New Zealand, currently making his way through our various wine regions on an exploration and storytelling mission to craft another sequel to the Sideways film. We got to speak with him and enjoy a lengthy conversation about his hopes for the journey, as well as how making such an iconic film has had an impact. Rex, it's great to have you here. You have quite a remarkable story as a writer and an ideator. And so we want to talk about Sideways, that incredible story that then was made into a really great film starring Paul Giamatti, about, you know, two friends traveling through the Californian wine country. That story has taken you on quite a journey that now brings you here to New Zealand to write. Would you call it a sequel?
Yes, it is a sequel, because they're going to be, obviously, later in life, because we hope it'll be a movie. Mm. And if it's a movie, it can only star Paul Giamatti and Thomas Hayden Church, and they have aged. So I guess by default, it is the sequel. It's not like Batman, where, you know, you can just put the rubber suit on Clooney or Christian Bale or, you know, whoever it is next. You know what I mean? So yes, it technically is a sequel. There have been two other sequels, but they haven't been made into films. My publisher doesn't want to call it Sideways NZ4, just wants to call it Sideways NZ, so that the readers don't feel like they have to read book two or three to read this book. And they don't. You could literally imagine that Miles, and I'm not even really beholden to what's happened in book two and three, other than one thing, which is Miles has experienced some success as a writer now, as opposed to in Sideways, where he's not experiencing success. However, his fortunes haven't really... they haven't skyrocketed like some people, and maybe he's, you know, living back on fumes again, which is where I was living when I wrote Sideways. But he's found himself, actually, it was a friend of mine's idea. I was going to have Miles and Jack come to New Zealand for, you know, I have to conceive a reason. And I thought maybe he was on some sort of book tour, but a friend of mine said, well, why don't you start with Miles there? And when I got here to Prophet's Rock, this absolutely beautiful winery up on a hill here in Central Otago, I thought, gosh, maybe Paul Giamatti has a full beard and he's been hiding out for 2 years from, I don't know, maybe feeling like he's been stereotyped, or maybe also he's got problems with America like I do. I mean, I have problems with my country. And yeah. Of course, New Zealand is one of the places people want to go to escape the coming apocalypse. And Miles has a very apocalyptic or eschatological sensibility. But he gets some news, and I'm very open with this on blogs. He gets some news that's very shocking, but not tragic. And he has to go back, and they try to, but he has a new book coming out, and the publisher here is New Zealand or whatever, the one who will publish him now, wants to do a book tour. And he thinks it's going to be, you know, the rock star bus and the five-star hotels. And the next thing you see, Jack coming up in a camper van.
which, if you know, for New Zealanders feels about right and somewhat iconic.
Well, right. And I've since learned that. And by the way, that was not my idea. I'm a very collaborative person. That was a very close friend of mine who is my archivist, actually. She archived the Rex Pickett papers. And my most recent novel, I'll plug it, is The Archivist, which is out by Blackstone Publishing, who, by the way, is the one going to do Sideways NZ. So it was her idea, and I thought, that's really great. But starting Miles down here instead of up in, you know, arriving in Auckland and coming south, which was my initial conception, I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if Miles started here and Jack picks him up and they start heading north? So that now is what the trip is, and it starts on July 12th. I'm getting nervous because we're trying to, you know, hatch a lot of events. So in Oamaru, we've got the tough guy. We got the tough guys book club. So I'm excited about that. I mean, there's a couple of wonderful women I met at Winetopia want to hold a book signing at the Welsh Bar in Wellington, which apparently is supposed to be quite an iconic, wonderful place. I said, anything is honestly, Tosh, anything that's authentically Kiwi, I want to get inside the culture, especially, you know, Maori culture a little bit too. I think it would be remiss of me to take that trip and not, you know, get into their culture a little bit too. And, but at the end of the day, it will be a sequel, and Miles and Jack will have, they will have reunited, let's say, after maybe 3 or 4 years, they've been out of touch in a camper van in New Zealand.
So, I mean, many of our listeners have probably heard of method acting. Talk to us about the relationship between the experiences and the writing of the novel. And then, of course, you know, what you'll be experiencing of our food and drink culture, of our communities. How does that all come together for you and the experience of writing the story with these characters that are already so well established?
You know, that's a terrific question. And, you know, I'm not an actor. I do know a little bit about method acting. I've directed a couple of films, but, you know, I guess I am the character of Miles. So Sideways is written in first person from the standpoint of Paul, of Miles Raymond, who is played by Paul Giamatti. So I'm that character. Jack is the model for Jack is a friend of mine, Roy Gittins. I mean, we've kind of fallen out of touch the last 10 years, but as somebody said to me, it doesn't have to be who Jack Roy Gittins is today. It could be, and he's a great guy. We just have, you know, we've drifted apart. It can be who you want Jack to be. And that was actually a revelation to me. I can make him somebody he's, you know, because in book two, he's divorced now. He's on the skids. He's drinking too much. Maybe he's found his mojo. Maybe he's gotten back, you know, something. So I do have to, I don't have to necessarily be the character because I am the character. It will be my worldview. So it's not like I'm Daniel Day-Lewis and I'm going to be playing a heart surgeon, you know, so I got to go study heart surgeons, but I do have to see the locations, Tosh. I mean, you know, just take stuff like the Welsh Bar, for example. I can't make up stuff like that. You know, that has to come to me. And so anyone listening to this, you know, you're welcome to write me if you've got off the beat stuff. I'm just rexpickett@gmail.com. But, you know, or I met somebody from the New Zealand Police Department who has a book club in Martinborough. And I thought, wow, what a, you know, so those are things, honestly, that are hard to make up. How I weave those into the story, we'll see. I mean, certainly I'll know when it happens. I have to experience it. You know what my biggest fear is I'm going to miss something. That's my biggest fear.
A long time ago, I used to be involved in marketing New Zealand, and we used to talk about New Zealand's diverse proximity, which is a terrible sentence fragment, but really just means there are so many different types of experiences that are all really closely packed together. So I think that's a very common experience of people who are visiting the country.
Well, I mean, I can say one thing really quickly to cut you off is I'm going to avoid cliche at any point. You know, obviously New Zealand is a gorgeous country up and down. It's different in every place, but it's just pound for pound, it may be the most gorgeous country in the world, at least what I've seen. But I have to steer clear of that because a novel is about character, you know, and I find drama, conflict, and comedy in character. The settings are going to be great. The locations will be great. But anything that's cliche, I'm going to avoid. Anything that's cliche New Zealand, cliche Kiwi, I'm going to try to avoid, you know, as much as possible. You know, anything that takes me off the beaten path or whatever. I mean, Sideways, for example, was shot in the San Ynez Valley, which is about 2.5 hours north of Los Angeles. It was not even a wine region. Yes, there were wineries there and there were grapes there, but it wasn't even now it's a wine region. And it has its own sub-appellations and everything because of the movie. I mean, we knew Napa Sonoma was a wine region, but not the San Ynez Valley. Obviously, you have 8 incredible wine regions. It's not really my goal to necessarily represent wine regions specifically, but I will be going through that. I mean, because now it's going to look like product placement or influence peddling. I have a story to write and I have to honor the fan base's sense of they want to see Paul. They want to see, you know, Thomas Hayden Church in, you know, and probably get into some mischief again and, you know, and have a kind of a wild, wacky trip, but then get down, you know, find the heart, find the soul, whatever. And that's what I'm going to be starting July 12th, living for 3-4 weeks in this camper van. You know, so anything that's cliche, anything that's chamber of commerce, I'm going to shy away from.
Which I think, you know, appeals to probably New Zealanders' sense of authentic, quirky, wouldn't happen anywhere else, but the undiscovered gems along the path. I'm interested to dive a little bit into, and I'm sure you've probably tired of telling this story, but to unpack for our listeners a little bit of what the impacts were of that original kind of sideways film, and just exactly what it did for some of those aspects of, well, as you say, you know, regions that weren't previously considered wine regions, but also for sparking an interest in the relationship, I guess, between dynamic, interesting characters and the way that wine and those experiences can play a part in their development and in their story.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. Obviously, at the risk of immodesty, the movie had a huge impact. For one thing, it made wine tasting extremely popular. Mm-hmm. The San Ynez Valley has benefited in the tunes of hundreds of millions of dollars, not just the wineries, but think of all the other people who benefit, hotel owners and whatever. And a lot of people thought maybe it would go away, it would evaporate after the movie. Oh no, it's grown, Tosh. It's bigger than ever. But it isn't just the San Ynez Valley. It's Napa Sonoma. It's wine in general. I think, you know, when you have characters like Paul Giamatti specifically, who so lived in and so three-dimensional and so heartbreaking in his own way, if he loves Pinot, you got to find out what's in this Pinot Noir. You know, if you love the movie, if he hates Merlot, then I guess you got to go figure out why he hates Merlot or whatever. If he went up to the Hitching Post and these other places, maybe I should go up there. Remember, the San Ynez Valley sits on top of 15 million people in Southern California. So, you know, but it has not gone away. It's grown. And there are studies to show that the so-called sideways effect is really for real. It not only Pinot Noir sales grew by 800% since the movie, you know, they were only 1% of the red wine sales, but just in general, wine sales have gone up and worldwide. And so, you know, I think I didn't start out to write a novel about wine. I was writing a novel about myself, kind of living on the edge. In the novel, I'm not a school teacher, whatever. And I wanted to write where I was at, which was a state of complete despair. I was at the end of my rope. But I thought, I can't sell despair unless I make it funny. So that was my model, was make it funny, but I can then sell that the heartbreak, the sense of failure. I think Miles represents somebody who is, or as a young person said to me, and I love to ask young people who are discovering the film for the first time on DVD and not in a big theater like I got a chance to. And one young person said to me, "So what is it about Miles, Paul Giamatti?" And he goes, "He's down, but he's not out." And I like that. You know, he's self-effacing. He's not afraid to express failure. You know, a lot of us hide it. And I think a lot of people, look, we're not all superheroes and we don't all get to be, you know, not that we would want to be, aspire to this, but we don't all get to be, you know, movie stars or billionaires with yachts or whatever. It's really the vast majority of people are like Miles. They're mired in jobs and they have hopes and dreams. He represents a guy with hopes and dreams. And that's actually who I was at the time, even though I had made some movies and done some other things. And when it fails, that actually is the reality. Success, you know, you go on Twitter and like, you know, today is the first day that it could happen for you and all this upbeat homilies and stuff. I mean, fuck that. The reality is rejection and failure. And Miles he epitomizes rejection and failure. And that's what makes him so lovable. And that's who I was at that time. Not that I'm lovable, but that's what, you know, and so I need to stay consistent and pay homage to that character who, I don't want him to be some wild success who's some millionaire now or whatever. You know, he's not James Bond. You know, he's not that kind of franchise character. He really is somebody who has deep thoughts. He philosophizes, he ponders the world. And actually he and Jack are wonderful complements of the male character, because I was saying this at Winetopia to somebody. Miles is sort of a classic introvert and Jack is a classic extrovert. Miles needs Jack to take him to the world. Without Jack, Miles might never get a date. He might never even have a chance of a relationship. He hates rejection so much, which is me, that like one no from a woman for whatever reason, he might not ask another woman out on a date for 3 months. Jack will ask 10 out every day. But Jack needs Miles for self-reflection because he doesn't have the self-reflection. And that mix, which is very much kind of like wine in some way, you have the sugar, which is Jack, and you have the acidity, which is, you know, Miles. And it's that balance of sugar ripeness and phenolic ripeness, which I see in the characters. I didn't think that when I wrote it, Tosh, but right. I'm now kind of seeing. And wine was in the background, but the wine industry pushed it to the foreground. Mm. So that happened and it changed. But Miles is not there to sell you on Pinot Noir or whatever. But when I came to Central Otago, it's 85% Pinot here. And
you are in Pinot land.
I mean, there are Pinot Noir vines right outside the door there.
Yeah.
And they have, of course it's winter. So they're deciduous plants and they have no leaves. I thought, oh my God, this could be Miles. Maybe he owns one half of a hectare of Pinot. He's given up his life savings for it. And I don't know, maybe he has to write a book because he needs the money. And I don't know, that felt right to me. So to going all the way back full circle, it is, I guess, method writing in a sense, but it's not in the sense that I'm not playing somebody who I'm not. This is who I am right now. I am here at Prophet's Rock. I would like to own a half a hectare of Pinot. So that's where we fictionalize a little bit. When we go on the trip, it will be me, but it won't be me. I will fictionalize and I will take some risk with it. And I do have a spine and I do have an ending. Mm. I will not write without an ending. But I would say, and I think there's a good chance that there will be a movie this time. I really do.
Yeah, which is exciting. You know, I've often thought it's fascinating to me. Wine, well, vineyards make for stunning backdrops. They make for stunning locations for films because they are so beautiful in the right season. And in the winter season, when the roots are diving deep and developing and all of that good stuff, actually they can be somewhat harrowing and bleak kind of landscapes within that visual picture. But then also, as you've alluded, within the broader category of wine, I do think there's remarkable metaphor for the human experience in terms of its seasonality, the depth and quality of the fruit over time, you know. But I'm interested in what you said about how when you first started with Sideways, wine was in the background and that wasn't necessarily how you were thinking about the characters or their journey. As that's developed over time and some of those ideas perhaps, you know, have a little more clarity or focus, does that change the way you approach creating these sorts of narratives?
Yeah, it does. I mean, for example, I just want to say two things quickly. It's winter here, and I love the idea that Miles begins with, there's actually a desolate beauty to this place. It's actually quite, growing up in Southern California and not seeing the leaves on the vine. And remember, well, I didn't tell you this, but I'm giving something away. The feed is going to get it.
We love an exclusive.
An exclusive. Thank you. Thanks for the word. Well, it's going to end in California, but it the epilogue may be back down here in Central Otago, but the bulk of the 85% of the novel will be here. So imagine this, if they take this trip during the winter, here with these deciduous vines, which are just now just, you know, root stocks and canes and twigs, whatever, which I think it has a real beauty to it. But when they go, then they get to Auckland and they fly to California, it will be harvest. Mm-hmm. So think of it from a standpoint of a movie, is that you're actually in winter this time where they're, I don't know, struggling with whatever they're struggling with and their souls and this journey and Miles is going to face the shocking news and everything else. But suddenly it's just green and it's harvest and it's blue skies. And it's, you know, I love that contrast from a cinematic point. To go back to another point, it has over time become apparent to me that, you know, there's a real wonderful beauty to wine that is not with distillates and it's not with craft beer. Sorry for those people, but you know, wine has a circadian rhythm. You know, it has a year, and you know, right now we're in winter. These vines are hibernating. They need to hibernate and rest up for the vigor they need in the spring. In the spring, there's bud break and they face challenges in bud break. They could get late frost that could destroy a lot. They suffer, Tosh. Mm. these winemakers suffer. And the summer, of course, they hope it doesn't get too much rain because they don't want the grapes to plump up, or especially in the fall, they don't want wind shear. I mean, they suffer that year and they only have 1 year to get it right. In a way, it's an analog to writing. It's an analog to art. And they make certain choices. Right now, they're making choices in pruning, how they're going to prune. I make certain choices. Okay, Miles starting in Central Otago. That's a choice I'm making, Tosh. Mm-hmm. I have to live with that choice. I mean, I could go back with a jackhammer and probably start over again, but I'm not going to do that. And so that circadian rhythm of a year, and you go through the seasons, for me, it's very much like the journey I take when I've made movies and when I write a novel. It is a kind of a three-act or four-act structure, journey, whatever. You know, craft beer doesn't have that. If it's a bad batch, you can make another one tomorrow. You can't do that with wine. And distillates is the same thing. It's just made in a plant, a factory. You know, I'm sorry, but I can't imagine, you know, a craft beer tasting overlooking a barley field. But vineyards do have this exquisite, sublime beauty to them that is just, there's something about it. It's not just fermented grape juice. It's not just another alcoholic beverage. It has soul. It has poetry. Mm. And it has become, I really believe. And when I talk to winemakers, the way they talk about the vineyard, it's almost anthropomorphized in a way. The way they talk about wine and winemaking, it's very, very similar to writing, to making choices. And living and dying by the critics, I guess, you know, living and dying by the reception. There mm-hmm. really is. And so I really relate to winemakers so much because they do suffer for, especially down here in Central Otago. You know, I'm not talking about the big winemakers and we don't need to name them, but, you know, I'm talking about the, you know, the small producers, the ones that I really gravitate toward. They really suffer that year. And they could have a year where they only get 50% of what they got the previous year because of, you know, they look, it's an outdoor sport, Tosh. You're living. It's not like they're suddenly get high scores and they can plant more grapes mm-hmm, or, you know, mm-hmm. or like Amazon build a new fulfillment center. They've only got 1 year to get it right. And they can't, maybe they can buy some more land, but then they're gonna have to wait years before the grapes are identifiable. I don't know. There is an analog, and I love wine for that reason. And it has something else that other alcoholic beverages have, with the exception of some, you know, single malt whiskeys. It has ageability, so it has a life that you can go back. It maybe doesn't have the same ageability as, say, art, but then a lot of art is ephemeral. It doesn't mm-hmm. last beyond one read or one viewing. But, you know, let's face it, War and Peace is still around, whatever. So maybe 1900 wines aren't around, but it does have that ageability, which gives it a different mystery, because that wine is, now I'm going to sound like the characters in the movie, but it is changing and it is evolving. Yes. And it also does something else. There's a great book and it has a terrible title. It's called Drunk, but it's not what you think it is. And it's a history of alcoholic beverages in civilization around the world. And the author posits the idea that we needed alcohol to create civilization, that without it, we would be savages. And I, you know, and he makes a very cogent argument for it. And I truly believe that, you know, that wine becomes kind of a lingua franca with a lot of people. It's a way to get together to talk about things. And so Miles, he doesn't just drink wine. He talks about it. He rhapsodizes about it, or he disparages it. You know, he disdains it if it's got, you know, oh, this is just some, you know, went down the, you know, it actually evokes criticism the same way film and TV shows and literature and plays. It evokes, you know, it evokes a discourse of like, did you like it? Why didn't you like it? And I think that discourse is something I've been about my whole life. I love to not argue, but I love to talk about films and why you like this or didn't. And because we're talking about developing a sensibility. And it's about developing a palate. The only thing I'm going to say here, not to interject an acidic note here, but, you know, with literature and film, there is a democracy. We can all read War and Peace, but we can't all drink 90 Rieslings. Mm-hmm. So there is an elitism. There is a snobism. And that part about wine, I don't like. It's the only part I don't like.
Yeah, yeah.
But you brought up a great point, Tosh. It is so true. I really see the parallel between wine and winemaking, especially at the level here in Central Otago, and I'm sure the rest of New Zealand too, tremendous respect for the land, not trying to, you know, they're very non-interventionist. They're trying to make wines that aren't manipulated, which they're getting more and more manipulated, the same way literature and film is getting more and more commercial and trying to tweak you in some way. I mean, I want it to be a true expression of this place, the same way I want my work and my novel to be a true expression of who I am and where I'm in a place, because I think that's real. And I always use this word, verisimilitude, you know, the ring of truth. And I try to create characters who have and create a setting and everything that have a verisimilitude. And for me, New Zealand, if I were just to come here and just drive around for a week or something, you know, and then go write a novel, that would be disingenuous. It would be disingenuous to my fans. It would be disingenuous to Kiwis, particularly. My biggest fear, you know, other than the other one, is that Kiwis are going to say he didn't get it right. That keeps me up at night.
Right.
So as much as I can steep myself in New Zealand, as much as I can absorb the people, I want to meet the real people out there. And I have. I've met a lot of them. And starting on July 12th, it sounds like I'm going to meet a lot more. it was a great question. And you're exactly right. You know,
let's talk a little bit about the people that you have met. You know, give me your impression of Central Otago so far.
Well, first of all, when you fly into Queenstown, it is staggeringly beautiful. You've got you come into a valley, but you've got snow-capped mountains on both sides. But it's not that kind of real cold you might get in Canada or Montana. It's not that cold because you've got this temperature regulator of these two oceans. It is just staggeringly beautiful here. I live in Southern California, so to me, every day is sunshiny. And, you know, it's like, it's boring to me. Here there's some weather. It's actually drier than I thought. I did get to drive from Auckland to Wellington, which is very different. It's much lusher and greener, and you have so much coastline, which is, I live right on the beach. I have to live close to the ocean, Tosh. I get suffocated. I get panic attacks when I go inland. So I like being, although I'm inland now, admittedly. So my first impression is the beauty. It is, you know, and I know that's a cliche, but New Zealand is staggeringly beautiful. And the people here are, you know, mostly I've met winemakers, but I've met other people too. And there is a reserve to Kiwis, unlike, well, as you can tell, I'm American. I'm not reserved. I'm unreserved. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I tell it like it is, whatever. And there is a kind of a reserve to them. And they know I'm here, but it's kind of like they're not going to acknowledge it, and which is fine, which is totally cool. I've got to kind of understand the vibe, but you know, there's a real appreciation, and you know, that I sense from them for where they live, their land, and really how lucky they are when you compare it to the rest of the world. You know, so yeah, I mean, New Zealand is this kind of wondrous place. But I want to see a real, true New Zealand in the book and hopefully the movie, as opposed to just, you know, the Hobbit world or whatever, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. But there is another. And we do get it in some New Zealand films. Roger Donaldson going back. Obviously, your great Jane Campion, who is one of the finest filmmakers who's ever lived. Angel at My Table and The Piano, two of the greatest films ever made in the history of cinema. And she is a national treasure for you, as is Peter Jackson, but he's doing something different. I would bear in mind, you get to see films with New Zealanders, but not in the US we don't. So, but Miles and Jack, if it gets made into a film, now the US would get to see Kiwis, but they're going to get to see the Kiwis that are in the book, because Alexander Payne, if he makes it, is going to be faithful to the book. You follow me? So
yeah,
I want to get it. So this is filtered through Miles's, meaning Rex Pickett's, you know, aesthetic.
Indeed.
You know, his aesthetic filter, and it's, you know, and that's what you're going to get. And hopefully, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be about wine, Tosh. It could just be, I don't know, a guy in a camper van out in the middle of nowhere. And he's got someone mentioned a guy who's like selling, you know, crayfish over there or something's out in the middle of nowhere. That's a character to me. They got to stop and get a bite to eat. It's not just wine, you know?
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Of course there will be the book clubs, and a lot of them are going to be, you know, there are a lot of book clubs that women have. And I heard about that. I said, well, sign me up for as many as those, because those could be rife with comedy for me. You know what I mean? But you know, I just want to get into the culture as much as I can, you know, dive deep into it.
And wine in New Zealand is a great way to get into our culture, actually, because it's something that we've grown really proud of. And I think, you know, Peter Jackson did do something remarkable for introducing a different side of New Zealand to the world, you know, going back 20 years now. But maybe it is time for a new slice and a new perspective on that. You've been to the first Winetopia event, I believe. How was it? How did it go down? What was it like to encounter people who perhaps, you know, a slightly different type of fan base than what you've seen before?
Okay. Well, okay. So first of all, let me just, not disclaimer or whatever, but, you know, I'm a critical person. I wouldn't say something really positive just to be positive. Cause in a lot of interviews, you know, oh, he was great to work with. She was wonderful to work with. And they're just lying. And you know, it because they're not. I mean, if I thought Winetopia was kind of a joke or could improve or whatever, I probably wouldn't say it, but I probably couldn't wax on about how wonderful it was. But actually, I've been to a lot of wine festivals and stuff, oftentimes in California, just outdoors on a lawn outside a winery and just a bunch of, you know, tasting stations and a lot of mediocre wine. If you want to know the truth, you pay $80 or whatever and you got a tag and you go around and, you know, I've been to a lot of them where I didn't find them very interesting. I thought Winetopia was one of the best, right up there with one I went to in Italy, in Tuscany, but it was so well done. They had the creme de la creme of wineries. I mean, Prophet's Rock was there. But also, gosh, I'm looking at, you know, I mean, small wineries like Coal Pit or you had Rudy Bauer's, Quartz Reef was there and the Bone, I think the Bone Line or something, tiny little wineries. And I got to talk to so many of them and producing incredible wines and pouring their wines. You know, sometimes it's something you would never see in the States, and especially in California, where most of these festivals I've been to, you wouldn't see anyone pouring aged wines. I mean, there was somebody pouring a 2013 Cab Franc Merlot blend. It was one of, I think it was Bone Line, and it was one of the best wines I had there. You know, I thought it was extraordinarily well done, and I thought the venue was terrific. I don't mean to heap praise on Kiwis, but gosh, your airports are nicer. You have the cleanest bathrooms in the world wherever you go, and they're high tech. I mean, you seem to kind of do a lot of things, if not everything, right. I thought Winetopia was fantastic, and I genuinely look forward to the next two because it wasn't just, okay, I got to meet people, which I did, and all of that. And hopefully they'll, you know, if you're listening out there, you know, and you met me, please, you know, email me and tell me that, yes, you are going to really come through on that book club or whatever. But I got to taste some extraordinary wines and meet some extraordinary winemakers. It wasn't in California, it would be a hodgepodge of wineries. And you'd be going just because it's the, I don't know, Santa Barbara County Harvest Festival. But the best winemakers up there wouldn't be pouring there. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't be. You had some of the best people. Carrick, you know, I got to stay there, but, you know, Carrick Vineyard, which is here in Central Otago, there, and the owner was there pouring, you know, and the winemakers, I mean, Paul Pujol from Prophet's Rock, he was there actually pouring. Oftentimes the winemaker, Winetopia did everything right. Honestly, they did. It was brilliant.
There is something nice, I think, about our community, and particularly our community of winemakers. And in fact, you know, almost any our craft producers, there's a tight-knit community, and it's not very difficult to meet or get face-to-face with a number of those people, which I think is helpful for bringing both the story and the intentionality of the craft of what they're doing to consumers, which I think is really exciting. If there was one iconic or curious question that you had about New Zealand or an experience that you were hoping for, be it something that would take you by surprise or something that perhaps you've kind of got on a wish list, what would it be?
Something that has happened to me or something that I would like to happen?
Something that you would like to happen.
Honestly, you know, and I have people looking for it. So there is going to be a model for a character, you know, PR person, and I have someone who could be a model, but actually I'd like to find, you know, a Maori woman who could like be a model for a character who could kind of dip in and out, you know, that would be one thing. Actually, something did happen to me at Winetopia And that's kind of the one last missing piece, you know, for this trip that we're planning and everything, because it has to be planned. You can't just take off. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't operate that way. But I met a woman at Winetopia at the very end, and it turned out she's with the New Zealand Police Department. Mm-hmm. in Martinborough. And I thought, mm-hmm. that's weird. You would not see cops at a wine tasting harvest festival in the United States. And if you did, you would run away from them, you know. and she was really a nice person. And she said, they have a book club. I said, the New Zealand PD have a book club. I mean, you know, in the US, they probably have a gun club, you know, but I said, well, sign me up. And I said, you know, is there any, and then I was joking. I said, is there any chance you can give Miles and Jack a police escort with flashing emergency lights to your book club in their camper van? And she goes, well, we'll see what we can do, Rex. You know, but she got a crack. So that was, you know, I can't make that up, Tosh. I really mm-hmm. can't, you know, but I definitely, I think it would be disingenuous of me, you know, not to see all facets of New Zealand. You know, mm-hmm. not to see the, you know, and it's not just Maori. There's also, as you get north, there's a, you know, there's a huge Asian population here, mm-hmm. you know, and India and other, you know, whatever. So I definitely would like to, I need somebody to really be the model for that character and help me take me into that culture a little bit so that I don't want to be exclusive in any way. I don't want it to just be two white guys, you know, going mm-hmm. on a trip. I really want to bring that in and, not just for reasons that obviously it's probably going to get a better chance of being a movie and we all want the movie, but also I would like to be led down that path myself and see where that takes me. So it's about the next 3-4 weeks is going to be an inundation, a deluge of discovery for me. And I've just got to try to take it all in and apprehend and process it and whatever. So if there's any one thing, it's that character. I want that character.
Well, we can put the networks to work and see who we can rustle out of the corners. I've so appreciated your time and your conversation. It's always, I think, for me, inspirational to be able to engage and listen to somebody who's doing such a wonderful job of crafting really human stories, but against a backdrop of something that we really love and something that I think, you know, here in New Zealand, we have a lot to be proud of with our wine industry. So. Go Miles. Have a wonderful experience.
And I appreciate what you just said, a human story. You know, we're losing touch with the human. You know, it's not, like I said, not everyone can be. I know, coming from America, everyone seems so greed driven and they're trying to be influencers and everything. And what about just people trying to get along and just, you know, have a life and be reasonably content and, you know, and I know, have relationships and love and have a good time. There's something about that I really appreciate. I think maybe Sideways has endured, and it has endured. I can say that in all honesty without any arrogance at all, because I live it every day, because it has that human element. And I appreciate you saying that, Tosh. That's to me the greatest compliment, is that because I can say I'm human or whatever, but I only have words to translate that to you. I don't have mm-hmm. any other way. I mean, right now I have my voice, and I have my person, but in fiction, I only have words. That those are the colors on my palette. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't have an instrument. I don't play a violin or a piano or whatever. And it's not always easy to say, yes, I want to write something that is human, that has three dimensionality and has that ring of verisimilitude. I have to pull it off. Mm-hmm. You know, and so when you said that, that made me very happy today.
Well, I'm very, I mean it absolutely. And I think, you know, in the context, I'm not sure if anyone, you know, has shared this, but in the context, you know, in New Zealand, we have a couple of real challenges that we face socially. One is around mental health generally, but the other is specifically mental health and suicide rates amongst our male population. And so when I see a story like that of Miles and the experience of male friendship and what that does and what that brings, and it particularly in role modeling and demonstrating exactly some of what you talked about in terms of the dynamic of friendship and what that can and how that and how that can be so crucial and so important in supporting people through, you know, the low lows, as well as journeying with them on the high highs. And so,
well, I would say, you know, not to make light of it, but Miles suffers from these issues. Yes. You know, I mean, when I wrote Sideways, I was 40, I was dead broke and I had no future. And I just think that if you can, you know, kind of just draw upon those reserves somewhere in you and, you know, and try to move away from the things that are crippling and paralyzing you, you know, whatever it is, addiction is very, and mental illness are very linked, the two of them. Another whole podcast, but there's no question that Miles struggles with those things. And for him to overcome it is really, it really is his writing, not just his wine appreciation, which is part of it, but that writing means so much to him because that's the one way he's going to get to maybe find a catharsis for his depression.
Yeah.
You know? So interesting you brought that up here at the end, because there's no question he's not a completely stable person.
Well, you know, I think that's part of what makes him so appealing, universally appealing as a character, I think, because there are elements of, I think of each of our experience where we can see aspects of that, particularly as we get older, particularly as we face some of those, you know, more black and white, lacking nuance and complexity pictures, as you talk about, right? The Twitter and the Instagram of the world that says, hey, wake up today and be a winner. You know, that's not the reality of life. And for me personally, I am really excited to read the book and hopefully see the movie, and to see the next stage of Miles's journey play out, in a backdrop of a country that has so much to offer. So thank you for being willing to go on a camper van journey and exploration of Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Thanks for having me, Tosh. And I have to say, I've done a number of interviews here. They're also at a higher level of the interviews I often do in the U.S. They're more insightful. The people seem to have even a better understanding. And of course, you know, Kiwis seem to be more articulate than Americans. And if I were just to generalize, I know they'll hate me for saying that, but actually it's true. You know, there's been a much higher level of conversation since I've got here than there is in the U.S. But anyway, I really appreciate. I'm honored that you had me on your show. By the way, I got this sheep sweater. It's beautiful hand. It's got sheep on the front, and I was wearing it the second day at Winetopia. And today I go into Cromwell to get my red band. Gum boots.
Right.
So I'm going full native here.
It's all of, look, and we celebrate it. You. Good. Okay. All right. Once you're wearing those red bands with a pair of stubbies and your woolly jumper on top, then we'll know that you've really acclimated.